Welcome to Lusma Podcast. I'm Charles Lusma. It's been a while. I haven't really felt like podcasting. I don't know if you can tell. I just go through these funks, you know. I just don't feel like talking sometimes, to be honest with you. I think a lot of it has to do with my mood. And then some of it has to do with just my general inability to appreciate whatever it is that I'm doing. And I think I've mentioned it before. I think that's always been kind of a streak in my personality where it's difficult for me to really admire what I do. And unfortunately, I think the way that it expresses itself is that I can be very critical about the things that I do, which of course every artist has, but in that same breath, I think it's also that it's hard for me to then look at what I do and really think much of it. So if you ask me to podcast about stuff that I'm not excited about, then I'd be like, well, why would we talk about that? It's not fun. It's not fun for me to talk about it, and I don't think anybody else wants to listen to it. So a lot of it has, it's just an internal dialogue where I don't find, I don't find pleasure, I guess, or I don't find, what's the word I'm looking for? It's more like where you just need to be in awe of what it is that you do. You still need to, even though that's the thing is, even though I don't, that I don't find that interest or curiosity, I think you still have to do it. I think maybe that's a trained skill, you know, you have to cultivate a personality of appreciation, admiration, curiosity. And if you do that, I think you're going to find that you will more easily think that the things that you do are cool or that are interesting or that are, worthy to make into a podcast and that other people may or may not want to listen to, or rather may want to listen to. So here I am. I'm back. At least temporarily. We'll see what happens. What are the things that I'm curious about or that I admire lately? Well, a lot has happened really since I last podcasted, and a lot of it has to do with just being away from you guys. With enough time, it's easy to have something to talk about that's even that I would find interesting. But I've been, I've been away physically. I've been away. I went on a cruise for a little bit, and God, this is really hard. This is really, really, really hard. I just don't like myself that much. I don't like myself enough to make podcasts. That's what it comes down to. I just don't. You want honesty? I just don't like talking that much. I don't like talking as much as most people think that I do. And it's been, honestly, I think it's been 2 months since I last put out a podcast. For good reason. I just don't feel like talking. There's not much that I want to say. There is a streak of negativity in me. That's the truth. I went to lunch the other day with one of my friends. He goes, I don't know if you know this, but I think you might be a little depressive. And I'm like, you think? Because I just had an argument with him. This is he had asked me to lunch on Monday, and he goes, I go, fine, go ahead and pick a place. And he works in the food services, like in the food industry. So what he does is his company supplies food to other companies, restaurants, and so he knows too much. He thinks food is gross, and he thinks that he's seen what the chefs do in the kitchen, and like smoking in the kitchen, and how they treat the food, and so he goes, this place is disgusting. That place is disgusting. I'm like, fine, pick a place. I don't care, any place. He's like, there's nothing to eat. There's nothing good to eat in San Gabriel Valley. I'm like, are you serious? You know how big San Gabriel Valley is? San Gabriel Valley is like probably 30 some odd square miles, maybe more. Actually, I think it's probably more like 35, 40, I don't know. Point is, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of restaurants in San Gabriel Valley. And he can't pick a single restaurant. So that got me, like, I was livid. I was really upset. And so the thing is, and I told my wife, and my wife's like, dude, why do you have to be pissed off? I'm like, because he can't pick a fucking restaurant in, like, 300, you know, whatever, you know, and I was exaggerating. But he can't pick a single restaurant, you know, in within driving distance, you know, what the hell's wrong with him? Like, he's the one who asked me to go to lunch with him. I didn't ask him to go to lunch. He asked me to go to lunch. So I kind of, like, when I finally did have lunch with him yesterday or the day before, I was like, dude, come on. Come on. You're just using your working in this industry as an excuse for why you couldn't pick a restaurant. And the truth is, you're just picky. And he didn't want to cop up to it or, you know, to admit it. But the truth is, yeah, he was just being picky. He just didn't like, I think he finds... he doesn't like the taste in the general vicinity of, I don't know, we were trying to pick an Asian restaurant or whatever. He wouldn't own up to it, but point of it is, why do I have to be so critical of anybody? You don't. I just do. And I think that's, if you want me to be honest about what I am, that's what I am. I'm critical. And that's what makes me a good photographer. It's what makes me a perfectionist. If I don't want to talk about something, it's because I don't like it. I really, really don't like it. You want me to talk about stuff I'm not excited about? You basically have to pay me. Because it's not... I get it. I'm technically in the services industry in that I should probably put more out there, you know, for the good of mankind or for the good of the photography public. But it doesn't do it for me. And I find personally that the things that don't do it for me wind up dragging me down. It's a huge waste of my time, and it really bores me. So, you know, I say that in jest where I'm like, yeah, you got to pay me. But most of it is true. That's what I get paid to talk about in my workshops. I get to share a lot of my older retouching styles or whatever in workshops. I don't do that on a general basis with and on podcasts. What do I find interesting? At least, is there anything that I find interesting? Yes, a few things here and there. I'll do this chronologically backwards because I just finished a shoot that was pretty interesting. As I shoot more and more, or rather less and less, I find that the shoots that I do take on have a consistent look and feel and vibe to where I'm very comfortable now, even with makeup, which used to be, at least in the... I mean, look, I started 6 months ago, so makeup is generally still new to me. I think I've done makeup maybe 12 times, 15 times at most. I will say that prior to doing makeup physically, I was doing digital makeup a little bit here and there, and then also, of course, touching up whatever makeup artist, you know, did or didn't do. But after 6 months of doing makeup sporadically, I find that it's pretty... I will say finally now, I feel very comfortable with it. I screwed up the ones that I screwed up. You know, there have been shoots where I did it, and I'm like, I have no idea what's going on, but this looks terrible. Of course, I couldn't say it because I was doing the makeup, but the whole time I was doing it, I was like, this is bad. This looks... there's something horribly wrong about this, and I don't know what it is, and I can't fix it. In retrospect, now I know what it is because, you know, I think the problem... I'll tell you exactly what it is. At the time, I didn't know how to use makeup to shape people's features, especially the eyes. So I was just applying makeup kind of blindly without considering that the shape of this person's eye doesn't fit the type of makeup that I'm trying to apply, and that it's not a one-size-fits-all type of strategy. And so as I now do makeup, I'm really shaping the eye in the way that kind of, I'm normalizing in the same way that I liquefy people in Photoshop. So I'm really taking my Photoshop skills and applying it to makeup indirectly, you know, where it's not that I'm physically changing the size of her eyeballs. It's that I'm using makeup to accentuate the shape of her eyes and to kind of normalize the shape of her eyes. And then in that way, perhaps I don't have to do it so much in Photoshop, but chances are I'm still going to do it in Photoshop. But the point of it is, makeup is now fun to me, because now when I do makeup, there's this inner pride, this inner, you know, how do I say this? Like this, like courage, you know, whereas before I was deathly afraid. And a few times, at least one time, I even had the model just do it herself. Because I'm like, I don't want to screw this up. Why don't you just do it? One time. One time in maybe the last 12 times or 15 times or whatever, you know, the number is. I had the makeup, the model do her own makeup because I just didn't have the balls to do it. And I didn't want to screw it up. And then there are some times when I just didn't have time, so I had her come and show up with makeup. But the rest of the time, anytime I'm in the studio, I generally have my kit. I do the makeup myself. I'm learning something all the time, you know, how to apply bronzer, highlighter, and little tips and tricks that people show me along the way. But it's funny because not having any formal training in makeup, it is hilarious the type of application or like the way that I do it. I bet you if a makeup artist watched me do makeup, they would laugh their asses off, because it must be funny because I don't do anything by the book. I don't use primer. I don't use any. Oftentimes, I don't even use foundation. I have the girls put a light layer of foundation sometimes on some concealer. I don't know half of the things that I'm using or that people come with, you know, so a lot of it is just trial and error. I know what it is that I want, and I just do what to me is the shortest distance between two points. For example, if I want highlighter on the cheekbones, I basically take highlighter and I just put it on the cheekbones. There's no technique. There's no primer. There's no, I don't know what else there is. There's probably a whole lot of other things you're supposed to do, but it doesn't matter because ultimately I have to deal with anything that I do. I have to retouch it. So do I care if it's a little less here, a little more there? That's the other thing I learned is with makeup, there's no perfection. There's no, oh, let me just clean up that one little spot. Because if you clean that up, you're almost guaranteed to screw something else up. So the typical mentality of trying to get everything exactly right, which is what a retoucher does not work at all. With makeup, you just have to let it go when it's good enough and say, I'll deal with it in Photoshop, which is exactly what you hate to hear as a photographer is, oh, you can fix that in Photoshop, right? Yes, but I really would rather you do it correctly. But now that I'm doing makeup, I realize that's an inevitability. It's a must. Because if you can't walk away from, for example, like today, as I'm doing her mascara or something, like I smear mascara on her under her eyelid or on the top of her cheekbones, and I'm like, fuck. I'm like, how did I do that? Fat fingered her, you know, her mascara or something, I don't know. But the point of it is, so what? That's like two dots in Photoshop, literally two dabs of heel brush. Do I want to spend, of course I spent, you know, as 2 minutes or whatever it is to try to clean it up as best as I could, but then you have to, then once you clean it up, like I had to take it off, but then once you take that off, you've also taken off some of the foundation and concealer or whatever else that she has, so inevitably you have to then put back some of that foundation and concealer back on. So it's a process. Now, was it perfect when I finished it? No, it definitely wasn't. Like, it was still a little darker, and you know, it's what it is. Like, makeup isn't perfect. It's not perfect until you get into Photoshop and you just fix everything for what it is. So, but is it fun? It's fun now, you know. It's way more fun than before. It's not scary. It used to be scary. It used to be not fun because I was like, I have no clue if this is going to come out well or really, really horribly. And the one time I did it badly, and I can't in good, I would tell you who it was, but I just can't. I can't, because I think that, you know, I think she knows that I screwed up her makeup, but I just can't. And, you know, I can't say it. I can't. It hurts too much still. But I spent a lot of time in Photoshop trying to clean it up. And without really knowing what it was that I screwed up, I really couldn't do a good job cleaning it up. I could take it down a lot, but it wasn't what I wanted it to be ultimately. So if I ever had another chance, I think I'd do it differently. I would definitely do it differently. So anyway, that's that. Stylistically, with what I'm doing now, I find that I'm much more in my element, and there's good and there's bad with that. It's what's good about it is I really do get like the kind of shots that I want. It's easy to ask things where, you know, there's still some instances before where not that long ago, I think it depends. It always feels like a negotiation. But now, because I only pretty much shoot with girls that are asking me to shoot, it's way easier to just say, hey, you know, are you comfortable with this? Well, let's do this and this, do that. And because I'm comfortable, it allows me to ask myself to be uncomfortable. So it's really different than someone making you uncomfortable. You know, there's an external force that pushes you to get outside your comfort zone, and then there's an internal request, which for me is much more easy to accommodate. When other people say, hey, you know, you're doing this wrong, why don't you do this instead, I get defensive. But when it's internally driven, I'm like, you know what, this is really getting boring, you really ought to try something else, I'm like, you know what, you're right, I think I ought to try something else. So as an example, the other day I was shooting with Kat Berman, who I've been posting pictures of on my Instagram. Nice girl, really, really easy to work with. And I didn't really have any looks left. We were shooting at my house. I didn't have any places left that I wanted to shoot. And so I was like, you know, I took a look outside, ran across the street to my neighbor's house. And I was like, you know, let's just go shoot at my neighbor's house. Except for the fact that I didn't have any permission and the gate was locked and they don't live there. So we hopped the fence and shot in their backyard. That's not typically what I do, because the way that I do things is very, I'm much more contained when it comes to these types of things. I'm not the type of photographer that easily asks his model to get naked in the middle of a public road. Some people do. I've always envied that. I don't have that. It makes me very, very nervous. So I think I definitely am more of a nervous photographer in public spaces, and which is why I like the more deserted and remote locations. But it's also, you know, playing inside your comfort zone is also limiting, because you won't always get things that surprise you. At least recently, the times that I've gone somewhere that I'm not used to going to, for example, in this specific case, hopping the fence, going over my neighbor's yard and shooting in the backyard, like that really is getting outside my comfort zone. And we got stuff that I think really worked, and that we wouldn't have gotten if I were limited to whatever it is that I have access to at my house. What are other examples of getting outside my comfort zone? I was shooting at the roof. I've been in the studio for a year and a half and only recently just gone up once or twice. And I found a few spots to shoot. It's a little unnerving because by the pool, there are a lot of people hanging out, sunbathing. There are chairs everywhere, so you can just lounge and chat. So I generally don't like that feeling of having an audience up there. And in addition to which, I have to shoot everything with clothes on. So there are spaces in the building where it is quiet enough where you can kind of skate by unnoticed. And of course, nobody's really going to say anything if they saw it, but still, I don't like to be the one who kind of gets in trouble and does something that he or she isn't supposed to do. But that's another example, is going all the way up to the roof. And I don't know, just in general, I think it's kind of weird. It's, you have to be so comfortable that you are able to get uncomfortable. That's one way. And the other way is just never be comfortable ever. And then you're just always uncomfortable. It depends on your personality. Personally, for me, it's, I have to be so used to, for example, with Photoshop, I have to be so used to dodging, burning, creating layers, masking, curves, levels, all of the above, and then be so good with that that it's, I can do it with my eyes closed. And then, because I can do it with my eyes closed, then I can start mixing and matching and then stacking and really getting outside the box, which is basically assimilating the information, then reinterpreting it in a different way. There's a specific word for it. It's basically an evolution, basically, of a process that you've completely gotten down to a T. So, yeah, that's my style. So when I think about the way that the last couple shoots have gone, it really has been much more of a complete calm. You know, I'll be the first to admit, I think I've said this on podcasts before, I used to get really anxious. So oftentimes there's a lot of like nervous banter, and even to the extent where I would, and I used to do this, would be like asking the models, hey, who have you, you know, which agency are you represented by, you know, and then be like, hey, I know who those people are at your agency. I've worked with them before. And it's like, oh, who do you shoot with? Oh, yeah, I know those photographers. You know, look at me. I know everybody. And that comes from a place of a lack of self-confidence, I think, a lack of, or kind of wanting to posture and assert your position. But it comes from a place of lackingness, you know, of not having enough self-worth, where you just, if you did, you wouldn't have to prove to anyone else what you have or what you are or what they ought to think of you. So now it's a lot more quiet because I don't say stuff. I don't feel like I have to. I just don't. So I just don't talk. A lot of not talking maybe is, it's different. For podcasts, I don't talk because I don't find what I'm talking about very interesting. For working with models, I don't talk because I don't have anything to say. Maybe that's exactly the same thing. But it's more so that when I used to talk with models, I used to try to, you know, prove that I was someone and show that I was important by who I worked with or what I used to do or whatever it is, you know. But now it doesn't matter at all. I just don't feel the need to. The girls who come and work with me, I have no need to try to impress because they've seen my work and they are here because they are impressed, not because I still have to impress them. So it's a lot quieter on my sets now. And in that same breath, because it's quieter, it's because I'm operating from a place of confidence and comfort. So I'm not afraid when I need more time to do something. I'm not afraid to sit down and just work with them on their makeup. And if I screw it up, then I gotta fix it. I'm not afraid to ask them to wear what I want them to wear. I'm not afraid to hop the fence to my friend's or my neighbor's yard to get the shot that I think that would fit the style or fit the wardrobe or whatever. It's taken 7 years. It's been a long time coming. But to this day, I think not just in regards to this, in this forum of photography, but to this day, I think I still work on self-esteem and self-confidence. I generally don't wake up feeling amazing. You would think that I would, but I don't. I generally wake up feeling pretty shitty, pretty groggy, and pretty upset. And it's not because I haven't had my morning Joe. I don't drink coffee. So I generally stay in a crappy mood most of the day, most of the times. So when my friend was like, hey, you know, you might be a little bit depressive. I'm like, you think? He's like, yeah, because everything that comes out of your mouth is pretty negative. And I think you try to act positive, but you're really not. I'm like, finally someone gets me. That was a revelation that anybody actually understood me. So this reminds me, I really ought to thank him and text him back and be like, you know, I talk to a lot of people, and very few people see through the charade of trying to be positive, because it is difficult for me to be positive. I am generally not. I don't have anything nice to say. I don't have a silver lining. It's just easy for me to look at things for what it's missing, because I do that day in and day out, right? I look at stuff and I go, I gotta fix this. I'm a fixer. That's what I am. If I don't have problems, how am I gonna fix stuff? Fixers are not positive by nature. Fixers look at stuff and then find stuff to fix. That's why they're fixers. I'm a problem solver. I find that interesting. I do find humor. I find humor in a lot of the self-deprecation, the problems with myself, the mistakes. Because it is funny when it's funny when it's not happening. It's funny a lot later. If you were to ask me what's going on with the makeup that day when I really, really botched it, I could not laugh with you, because you'd be laughing at me and you would only be hurting my feelings. I'd be really butthurt if you laughed at my work that day. But with a little bit of distance and a little bit of time, it's all funny. How could it not be funny? Because if you took the humor away from this, whatever it is that you do, then you wouldn't be able to point the finger and examine certain things and question the process. And for me, the analytical side of what I do and being able to kind of look at me as a character, as, you know, and this is real. I'm not trying to be someone. This is what I am. But examining myself as if I were a character that were, doctored by, you know, someone who drew me or someone who wrote me as a character on some show or whatever, is incredibly interesting, because you can't make this stuff up, because all the negativity that I spew or I feel, you know, has really affected me in my personal life. Like, I've lost friends. Like, I probably have less friends today than I did a couple years ago. And I've talked about this briefly, you know, I chalked it up to cycling and having a lot of testosterone reintroduced into my system, where I was just really angry all the time on a huge power trip. And in retrospect, it's mostly true. Mostly a lot of it is that. And then the rest of it is just that I'm just angry. I can be just an angry, mean person, which is fun, because if you can be comfortable in your anger and then tone it down just a notch or two and then spin it so that it's more funny than mean, I think that's where a lot of comedy comes from. So I'm still working on that, obviously, but I think there's a happy medium somewhere in that. Because, for example, like today, the thing with the whole cycling is that it's a seasonal thing. I cycle between daylight savings and daylight savings, which is basically when we move the clocks forward in during the spring, which is, I think, March, and then also when we move them back in November. So I've got 8 months of heavy cycling, and then between November and March I basically sit on my ass and get fat and I hibernate. But when I started cycling this season, as with last season, I've never been on steroids, but I'm sure that's what it feels like. I felt like I was on steroids. I was reinvigorated. I was angry all the time at everything. I was very, very belligerent, and I wouldn't back down for a knot. Like, I would not back down from a verbal or even a physical altercation. Not that I got in any, but I was very happy to if I had to, because I just had too much energy, the bad kind. So now that things have, you know, and that's in the beginning, because when you sit on your ass for a long time and then suddenly you start firing everything up, you find that, oh my God, like I'm a new man, you know, ready or not, here I come. Now, 6 months into cycling hard, it's October, you know, 7 months into cycling hard, you know, my hormones have definitely leveled off a lot. So I'm not as angry as I used to be. And so hopefully it's part of it is now I can reexamine some of the things that I used to do or used to feel. But the other part of it is, as being a minor, you know, at least a mild depressive, it is difficult to find humor, to find novelty, to be not angry. Like, I don't know how other people do it. I asked my wife once, you know, I'm like, do you wake up just feeling okay? She's like, yeah. Why wouldn't you? I'm like, because I wake up and I feel shitty all the time. I can't explain it. She can't explain it. We're just different, you know? And so part of the anger, part of the criticism, part of the, you know, personality is just, that's just what it is. It's what it is, and you can't fight it. You know, that was fun. That was fun talking on mic again. It's been a long time. I hope to be able to do this more soon. I can't guarantee it, but at least we'll have this podcast. And thank you guys for letting me be honest. That's the thing that I'm best at, to be honest with you, is being honest. I'm not that good with a lot of other stuff, you know, being fluffy and happy and feigning excitement and being entertained or interested is not my cup of tea. It's not how I work. So thank you guys for listening. You can find me in the normal places, Instagram, Facebook, wherever else. And I'll talk to you guys all soon. Peace.